Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Grueling Truth. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster, and we have another great guest tonight. But before we get to him, I want to, as always, introduce my co-host, Matt Andrew Scavage.
Mike, always a great time to do radio shows, and I'm looking forward to talking to Leon tonight.
Yep, me too. So our guest tonight was a huge part of one of the greatest dynasties in college football history, helping lead the University of Miami to three national championships. From there, he went on to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers and Jacksonville Jaguars. It's our pleasure to welcome to the show Leon Searcy.
Gentlemen, how you doing?
All right. Hey,
thanks
for coming on. I was a huge University of Miami fan back in the day. Still am, but it's not as exciting now. So I'm really excited to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. You know, anytime I can talk about myself is a good thing, I guess.
Hey, it's a good thing anytime somebody wants to hear you talk about yourself too. So.
Oh, man, I'm just glad to be here.
But I wanted to start off, I did a little research on you, and I noticed that you didn't play high school football until your senior year. Your mom was a school teacher, and she had a rule that you couldn't play until you had a 3.0 grade point average.
That is true. My mom, you know, I love my mom to death. She was an education for over 45 years. She's been everything from a school teacher to a counselor to a principal. And she just didn't play. I mean, I wasn't a bad student. 2.5, 2.7, that, you know. But my mom knew for some reason in high school that the demands of the academically, that she wanted to put that demand academically on me early. You know, so going into my 10th grade year, you know, I kind of sprung up. I grew from like 5'9 to like 6'4. And you could just imagine a big kid like myself not playing football in high school, and everybody's asking me, why are you not playing football? Why are you not playing football? And the reason why, my mom put the stipulations that she said, look, you got to get a 3.0 before you can play ball. And I went through my junior, my sophomore year, my junior year, then my senior year, right before that spring jamboree, you know, I had a 3.5 grade point average, you know. So I went out for football. I was kind of discovered actually playing basketball in the gym. My coach, who I love to death, a guy named Bill Gerke, out of Evans High School. I mean, he's been a coach over 45 years. He actually saw me in the gym playing basketball, and he asked me if I was, a sophomore, new to the school. And I said, no, coach, I'm going to be a senior. He said, you're going to be a senior at this school and you haven't played football? He said, I need to talk to your parents. He came to the house. He talked to them. And I just want to say the rest is history. You know, I progressed from there and got a scholarship at University of Miami. And, you know, I'm thankful to this day that my mom put those kind of stipulations on me. I mean, because when I went to University of Miami, you know, I stayed on course to graduate, and that's the most important thing.
All right, we
did
got
you
a
feel
caller.
Like that while you were going through that?
What's that now?
When you were going through that, was it did you find it pretty difficult, or were you just kind of, you know, mom told me to do it this way? And
well, it was very difficult those first 2 years. But I'm going to show you how God works. This is how God works in the situation. But I used to have to, after school, I used to have to go pick up my sister. I used to go have to walk to the elementary school to pick up my sister. And this particular time, my mom was there, and I didn't know. And she was talking to some of her coworkers over there to pick up their kids. And she was like, you know, my son has got the grades to go to college, but I don't know how we're going to be able to afford it. And I remember hearing that. And I remember going to school the next day, and it just happened to be the day where all the recruits come in, recruits from Michigan, you know, because we was a big-time program in Orlando. Orlando Evans had a lot of big-time schools come through there. It was the Michigans, your Notre Dames, the Arizonas, the LSUs. They were all there. And when I was walking the hallways, this was before the spring, they were asking me if I played ball. Or, you know, they was like, hey, what's your name? And I was like, hey, what position do you play? I said, well, I don't play football. And they said, well, do you know where the weight room is? So I would tell them to. So I had bumped into a lot of recruits on that particular day. And it just dawned on me that, hell, I can get a scholarship to play football and don't play. And that's one of the real reasons I went out for football, because I didn't want to put my parents in a predicament where they would have to send me to college. I mean, because I was already in a situation where my parents were barely getting by, and the last thing I wanted to do was for them to struggle. So that was kind of a blessing in itself, those last couple of days, which kind of led me into going out to some spring football and then ultimately get a starting job and get a scholarship down the road.
All right, we got a caller on the line. I believe this is Troy. You there?
Yeah. Hey, how you guys doing? Hey, Leon, this is Troy. I'm the CEO of the Red Light Sports Network. I was just calling in, guys, to listen to the show. I didn't need to come on the air tonight. I got to figure
well,
out.
Well, you didn't tell me that.
Does.
You got to tell me that ahead of time.
But,
I'll put you back
Troy,
on mute.
You always
then,
want
Troy.
To come on the air.
Hey, Leon, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Troy. How about yourself?
Doing good. Just so you know, I actually reside in Western PA, so I reside out in Steeler Nation, even though I'm originally from Green Bay. So, you know, we have a lot of Steeler Nation that are fans of the Red Light Sports Network. So I definitely appreciate you coming on Coach's show and sharing your time in the NFL and stories, you know, about your life and everything going on, because I'll tell you what, the Steeler Nation fans that we have really appreciate that. But since you got me on the show, I do have a question for you. You know,
okay.
you played in the late 90s, you know, early 2000s, and you had a chance to go through free agency, and I'm not sure if the guys are going to get to this. But one thing that we talk about on our main show, The Ramble, a lot, is how free agency has changed. And as you've watched this game progress from the 10 to 12 years that you've been out of football, what do you think is the major difference between today's free agency and when you went through it back when you were a player? And then I'll just go back on mute, Coach, and just finish up your show. I'm just listening in tonight.
You're usually on mute anyways, aren't you, Troy?
Well, you know, well, for one, the money is definitely a factor. The money is much huger than it was when I was playing. I mean, when I was playing contracts, I mean, these guys, I mean, we were getting signing bonuses when I was coming out as a free agent. And these guys are getting guaranteed money. I mean, my signing bonus when I came out, when I signed with Jacksonville, was somewhere in the nature of $5 million. And you've got guys now getting somewhere between 20 to 25 to 30 to $50 million guaranteed. But I think it's pretty much the same. I think teams do the same thing they did when I was playing. They go for needs. Offensive line was always a need. That was the reason why Jacksonville went after me. They had a left-handed quarterback, and I was one of the premier right tackles at that time when I was playing. So that's the reason why they went after me. Only thing I see different from then and now is the money. I think teams still go after needs. I think they go after needs, and then they hit the draft. I think that's the particular reason why the draft was actually moved back a month. I mean, for Showtime as well, but to give free agency an extra month so guys can get, you know, pick and choose the free agents that they may need, make sure they fall underneath the cap, and then draft guys, you know, pertaining to their needs as well. So that's my take on free agency, you know, from then and now.
Yeah. Go ahead, Matt.
That's cool.
You won three national titles at the U. What was it like to be part of a dynasty like that?
Well, it wasn't always easy. I mean, I think the one thing I do recall about playing at the University of Miami, it taught me how to be a champion. It taught me about the business of college football. And it started with Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson was a stickler on making sure that his environment, his coaching environment and his football environment was not country club. He kept the pressure on you. He threatened with scholarships. He threatened with positions. He threatened with sending guys home. He put demands on you to make sure you got your butt up and went to class. You came in the weight room. You studied. You put extra time in after practice. So it was no pleasure cruise playing at University of Miami when I was there. But the ultimate goal while I was there was winning championships, and that's what it was all about. It taught me how to be a champion. It taught me how to put in the time to be a champion, to make the sacrifices, and that's all we thought about that when we was there. It was about winning championships. I can, my 5 years at Miami, I can never recall going into a game where we thought that we were going to lose. And the reason why that mentality was instilled in us because we worked so hard from Sunday to Friday. And then Saturday, there wasn't many teams that could compete with us because we were so competitive. And it didn't have a lot to do with the coaches. I think that the biggest factor that the University of Miami was known for when I was playing back then is that the players put more pressure on you than the coaches ever did. I mean, you had to produce or you get cussed out or you get whooped. You'll get beat up in the locker room. You'll get tried at your dorm room. I mean, if you didn't get it done on Saturdays, guys called you out. And if you couldn't fight, then you took an ass whooping that day. And that's how the University of Miami was for those 5 years I was there. And that's the reason why we won 3 national titles. That's the reason why I only lost 4 games in 5 years. And it was some of the greatest times of my life. It taught me how to be a champion, and it was translated very well at the next level.
It kind of leads into my next question, which was Dennis Erickson. You know, he followed Jimmy Johnson. The team continued to win. I mean, how big a factor was Dennis Erickson in that, or was it something where it was so ingrained in everybody there that no matter who came, they were going to win?
Well, I always thought of Dennis Erickson, when he first came to the University of Miami, it was like he was given the keys to a Porsche and basically told not to crash it. Because we had, just the year before, you know, we had finished number 2 in the country. We had lost to Notre Dame by 1 point. And we felt that we had enough talent coming back to win another chance, and that's the title. And his first year there, I mean, he basically played with Jimmy's guys, and we won a national title. But as things went on, my senior year, you know, he kind of got his guys in there. He kind of, you know, guys were implemented to the system. And, I mean, he's the only coach, you know, and University of Miami history to win now 2 national titles. I mean, what he brought in was kind of revolutionary at that time because we had a 1-back system. He ran 3-4 wides out. He was utilizing our talents. And most of the times you were either in shotgun or under the center. And we were usually in trips with 3 or 4 wides, and we've had a 1-back offense because we had so much speed at the wide receiver position that he stretched the offense. And you, with the amount of speed that we had in Miami, you couldn't cover all our guys. And most of the time we lit up the scoreboard. So that one back 3-4 wide offense, I mean, put up a lot of points while I was there. And then the defense, he was just told not to touch the defense. Our defense was lethal when I was at University of Miami. I mean, we were always top 5 in the country, and we were going to stay with the 3-4 defense. We had enough senior leadership on the defensive side of the ball where, you know, they could call the play or they could call the defense out and we could get it done. So, Erickson, you know, he doesn't get as much due as he deserves because the first year he came in, he won a national title. But 2 years later, you know, he won it again in 91, and it had a lot to do with the guys that he had brought in.
You know, one of the things I always like to ask players as we're getting close to the NFL draft, you know, the draft has changed a lot over the years, but what was it like for you? What was your draft day experience like in 1992?
Well, man, this is in my book. I'm definitely going to give a good story. This is definitely in my book. But I didn't go to New York. I was invited. I stayed in Orlando. And to be honest, me and my dad woke up that morning about 6 in the morning. We took a walk. It took about an hour and a half walk. By the time we got back to the house, it was media on my front lawn. So the media's on my front lawn. We're not letting them in the house or whatever. So we go downstairs. My agent is down there. And the draft came on at 12 o'clock. So at about 9 o'clock that morning, I get a call, and it's Jimmy Johnson. You know, he was with the Dallas Cowboys at that particular time. He called me up and he said, Leon. And I knew his voice. When I picked up the phone, I knew exactly who it was. And I said, Coach Johnson. He said, hey, Leon, you know, we got the 14th pick in the draft. I think we're going to go ahead and draft you. We know you're going to be a Dallas Cowboy. I said, all right. He said, well, we got a representative just landed in Orlando. He's going to bring the contract in and hope you got your agent there so you can get everything signed up. He said, you're not going to hold out on it. I said, no, Coach, everything evolved. You know, I said, if the check is real, I'm going to sign. He said, okay. So my doorbell rings. The guy from the Cowboys comes in. He represents big guy, big burly guy. Big burly white guy, about 6'6", you know, cowboy hat on. He has his jersey thrown across his chest, and it's my jersey. I see it, 73. And he got Cersei on the back of it. So him and my agent are going in the back of the room, and it's like they're negotiating. So I'm chilling because I know the game. I know the draft comes on in a couple of hours, so I figure the Cowboys are going to get me. As we creep up close up into the draft, I get another phone call about the seventh or eighth pick, and it's Bill Cowher. Bill Cowher calls me up and says, "Leon, we're thinking about taking you the 11th pick in the draft." And I'm saying, "Well, you know, the Cowboys here." He said, "Yeah, I know. They tried to move up and get you, but we're going to take you at 11th. So when the 11th pick came around and they called me and said that you're a Pittsburgh Steeler, the Cowboy representative just left. I asked him for the jersey. He said no. He left, kept booking, and there was my draft. That was my draft story. And another thing I do remember about the draft is the late, great Stuart Scott, who was actually a sports reporter at the time in Orlando. He's the first guy that interviewed me when I got drafted. So that's my draft story.
That's pretty cool.
All right. You mentioned Bill Cowher. I mean, you were the first player picked, I think, under his regime as the head coach
of
the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like to play for a guy like Bill Cowher?
I loved him. I absolutely loved him. He was intense. He was a player's coach. He wanted to win. He wasn't going to do anything fancy. He was going to run the ball, play action you, and he was going to play sound defense. You know, he wasn't going to try to trick you. He wasn't going to try to give you different formations. All he was going to do, he wanted a rock-solid offensive line. He wanted a big tight end to go down the middle. He wanted the receivers to run, you know, the routes, protect the passer, and then he was going to play that 3-4 defense, that rock-solid Blitzburg defense. And I just loved it. He knew how to take care of us. He knew when to push us. He knew when to push the right buttons. He knew when to let us relax. He was intense. He hated losing. He wanted to win. I mean, him, my high school coach, Coach Johnson, and Bill Cowher are my all-time favorite coaches. I mean, I believe in my career playing football, and that's fan, they got the most out of me as a player. And I respect them for that because they pushed you. They were hard but fair. And I just absolutely love playing for the guy.
What was now? This another thing I always find to be very fascinating is just the idea of stepping out on the field for a Super Bowl. What was your most memorable experience for playing in Super Bowl 30?
I just remember. Right before I stepped on the field, I reflect being a little kid at the particular time where that's all I loved was football. And I was born in D.C., so I was a huge Washington Redskins fan at the time. And I just remember being as a kid sitting in front of the TV watching the Super Bowl. And now here I am, this big kid, about to step out on the field in the biggest game in the world at that particular day. And as gratifying as it was to be and play in Super Bowl 30, I think the most devastating thing about the game is that somebody has to lose. Because to this day, losing the Super Bowl is probably the most demoralizing loss that I've ever had to deal with. Because the excitement of getting there, the whole week of preparation, and then playing a team that you just absolutely did not like and had a history of not liking the Cowboys, and then to come away and lose it. I mean, it was you get at the pinnacle and you're at the highest high, and then when you lose, you're at the lowest low. So, you know, I just remember when I looked at the score when it was 27-17, I was devastated and wanted more time on the clock because we were so close to pulling off one of the great comebacks in Super Bowl history, and we just didn't get done. You know, when you have two turnovers, and you create a short field for the Cowboys, you're not going to win. And a good friend of mine, I know y'all had on the show about 2 weeks ago, if we had won that Super Bowl, he would have been MVP. LeVon Kirkland, I mean, he was a stud in that game. They would have no choice but to give him the MVP because the mighty Dallas Cowboy offense didn't have 150 yards total that whole game and had a lot to do with LeVon Kirkland in that middle, stopping Emmitt, getting off those double teams, shutting down Novacek. I mean, I was watching. He was a stud in that game. If we had a one, they would have had a hard time not giving him the MVP.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. I mean, that was one of the best games I've ever seen an inside linebacker, a linebacker, period, play in a Super Bowl. I mean, you had the sack on Aikman where he runs over Smith. I think you guys held Emmitt Smith to 56 yards on 12 carries.
Yeah, if he got – yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But listen,
I mean, we dominated statistically.
Okay, so after Pittsburgh, you went to Jacksonville. I think you signed there the biggest contract any offensive lineman ever signed at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah, for one day. The next day, you know, Willie Rosso signed $10,000 more than I did. So, you know, I was the highest paid offensive lineman in the history of the NFL for 24 hours. And then the next day, Willie Rofe with the Saints had signed just a bigger contract than mine. So, yeah, going to Jacksonville. I enjoyed my time there.
And Leon, that was 24 hours longer than most people get.
Exactly. Exactly. I got in Jet Magazine. I got my picture in Jet Magazine, so I'm good.
Now, Jacksonville, you played for Coach Coughlin, correct?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. What's your opinion of Coach Coughlin? I mean, I've heard a lot of things about when he was in Jacksonville and what kind of a taskmaster he was and everything. But
All true. His first year there in Jacksonville, he was a tyrant. I'm not going to lie. You know, couldn't take a knee, had to sit up straight, no hats, fine for everything. Everything was a fine. I asked Coach Coughlin one time. I just asked him where all this fine money was going, and he said something about a Christmas party. And I said, that's going to be one hell of a Christmas party, because he was fining everybody for everything. He was fining guys for everything. I mean, he's fining guys for being – now, here's the thing. This is how you were late to a meeting. If he walked in the meeting before you, you were late. Even if you were like 2 or 3 minutes early, you were late, he would find you. If he caught you sleeping, he would find you. Chewing gum, find you. It was one time he couldn't even eat sunflower seeds, couldn't bring coffee, cold drinks. I said, man, this is ridiculous. I mean, I come from Pittsburgh, and, you know, we didn't have any of this foolishness. The one time I did stand up and say something, we were playing in a preseason game. Now, granted, we were playing in a preseason game, second preseason game, and the guy who was playing next to me, a guy named Brian DeMarco, you know, he had first time playing guard, and he was getting handed to him a good bit, and he was jumping off sides. So we came in at halftime, and Brian DeMarco walks in front of me, and Tom Coughlin, you know how they have all the Gatorade set up on the table, whatever. Tom Coughlin came and took his arm and swiped all the great Gatorade off the table, pushed the Gatorade tank on the ground, and kicked the table. And he started cussing out Brian, and I had to say something. I broke him up because Brian was 6'7", about 300-something pounds, and Coughlin is just cussing him out, dog cussing him out. And Coughlin can't be no bit 5'7", maybe 200 pounds wet, maybe 180 wet. So I had to come between them. I said, man, we are. I told Coughlin, and I said, y'all have lost your mind. I said, this is a preseason game. I said, we're not going to make it this season with this kind of attitude. I said, man, listen, coach, let us handle Brian. You go ahead, go ahead. I just knew it was just something crazy about what I had signed up for. And it lurked into the season, and we were like 3-4, and we had one of the top offenses in the NFL, but we were losing the games late. And Coughlin was just driving us like, I mean, you know, it was like we were working the steel mills, to be quite honest. He was just driving us. And we just went in the Coughlin office and said, look, coach, if you just let up a little bit, we'll make a little run and we could, you know, we're dying. You're killing us in practice. So late in the games, you know, we're not coming through because we ain't got the legs. So he let up and we made a run. And my first year in Jacksonville, we made a run. We made the playoffs. We went to Buffalo. We beat Buffalo in the first round of playoffs. We went to Denver, who's the number one seed, and we beat Denver. And the next thing you know, that season, we're in the AFC Championship game, go playing against New England to go in the Super Bowl. So he was a tyrant his first year, and as the years progressed, he let up. He trusted the guys more. He gave us a little bit more freedom, and that's why we had so much success when we was there.
Did you have either a favorite rivalry or who was the person that you thought was just your toughest battle or the toughest guy you ever had to block?
Well, it was actually three guys. There was a guy named William Fuller. He played with the Houston Oilers, the Eagles. There was Mike Strahan. Me and Mike, I mean, we had, along with our physical battles, we had verbal battles against each other back and forth. And then, of course, there's the late, great Reggie White. I mean, Reggie White was a combination of power and speed. And then I can't forget about the late, great Derek Thomas. Derek Thomas, I mean, he made a move on me to this day. I don't know how he did it. And if I have a hard time maybe explaining it, but he had a move on me where he, like, faked a half twist to a full twist and sacked the quarterback. So when he did all that, I told him he could have the quarterback. But if you have to see the move on tape, but he got me on that. So I would say four guys. Those four guys have probably been my toughest challenge as an offensive lineman. And then, you know, Peter Bulware with the Ravens, he gave me a little fits every now and then. But those are probably the guys that I had my toughest battles with.
All right. Well, I need to get this in real quick. We're on the live part of the show right now in 3 minutes, 26 seconds. We'll go off the air. An hour from now, if you're listening now, you can go on and you can get the podcast, get the last 15 minutes. Tomorrow night, we'll have Gary Jeter on. And I mean, hopefully you guys will come in and listen then. So this is the thing that really interests me about you is everything you're doing after you played football. I mean, we talked a little bit. You're writing a book about the offensive lineman stuff you're doing. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I've got a company that I started maybe 6 months ago. It's called Real Men Block. And what it is, it's apparel. It's apparel and T-shirts and dry fits and scullies all catered towards offensive linemen. I'm getting into designing gloves as well. I'm going to name the gloves. I've got padding pending equipment that is handheld equipment that offensive linemen can use by themselves or the offensive linemen. And I've also, I still mentor on Facebook, on Twitter. You know, I'm always connecting with high school kids, college kids, and, you know, giving them an overview on not just football and life, you know, because I've seen the good and the bad pertaining to the NFL. I know some of the entrapments that they might get lured into from men as well as women. And I just like molding, mentoring, and motivating guys. My whole thing behind Real Men Block is that I want to create a community of offensive linemen where we're helping one another. And I want to see offensive linemen grow. I want to be a part of the process of them going from high school, getting into college, and if they're blessed enough to play in the NFL, I'll be here for them as well. I'm also in the works of getting with investors and getting a training facility where offensive linemen can come in and train year-round. Now, I've been talking to some investors. I've been looking for locations for that. So those are the things that I'm working on right now. Like you said, I'm working on my book, and it has a lot to do with my upbringing and NFL, and everything like that. So, I mean, it's been a blessed experience. I can't wait. I'm already at work with it, so I'm hopefully it'll be a success.
I heard that part of your business to assist offensive linemen is they can send in their film and
I've got to mention that there's another process of Real Men Block where that's on the website as it grows. Offensive linemen from middle school to high school to college can actually send in their film, and I'm going to have a panel of guys who panel of experts, guys who played in Super Bowls, guys who got Pro Bowls, and we'll give you an expert analysis on some of the stuff that you need to work on, and then you'll be able to download training tape where the guys give you specific drills that you can work on, whatever it may be. It may be your hand speed, your foot speed, your head placement, your attack points, and all that kind of stuff. So all that stuff is in the process.
Sounds good. The mentoring, is that basically just for playing, or is that for off the field too?
Well, right now I'm leaving it up to kids. I'm leaving it up to the kid. If they want to talk about, you know, stuff that's on the field as far as blocking a guy and all that kind of stuff, then that's fine. And if they want to talk about life off the field and need some guidance and stuff to be leery of, I've got that for you too. So I'm open for all advice.
As we were doing some research, I also noticed that, do you still have a T-shirt business?
The Real Man Block is the T-shirt business and apparel.
Oh, that's all part of it. Okay, got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, my biggest question about your career is, when I did some research, I'd forgotten this, but from you retired in 2002?
Mm-hmm.
After signing with two or three different teams, never getting to play a game, I mean, how did you deal with the end of your career where you didn't really get to end it on your own terms? I mean, it's got to be rough to be, you know, a big physical offensive lineman, and then all of a sudden you can't play because your body won't allow you to.
Well, hey, you know, that just has to, you know, Father Time catches up with everybody. He's undefeated. And when it's time to go, it's time to go. I mean, I had a career of 8 years where I had missed a game. Well, I missed one game, and that was, I only missed one game. So I felt pretty indestructible when it came down to it. And then, you know, in Jacksonville, you know, I was supposed to do a one-on-one drill with a guy, and I didn't even hit him. I came off the ball, and I blew out my quadricep tendon that kept me out the year. And then I became a free agent, and I went to the Ravens. And a little ticky-tack drill where I'm punching a guy, I blow up my tricep. And then when I try to come back early, I blow it out again. So then I leave Baltimore. I sign with the Dolphins. I'm in the best shape of my life. When I signed with the Dolphins, I was maybe 365 pounds, way out of shape. But by the time we got to minicamp, I was 305. I was lightning quick. My bench was up. My weight, my squatting was up. My 40 was down. And I go into the first preseason game, and we're doing warm-ups against the defense. I blow up my tricep again. So you're talking 3 years in a row where I just didn't finish the season. I knew it was my time was up, and there's nothing I could do about it because I was at that particular time, I was considered damaged goods. When you're injured 3 years in a row, you haven't played a game, you're considered damaged goods to the NFL. And another reason why I didn't play is that my pride, I couldn't put my pride aside. A lot of the teams that wanted to bring me on board basically wanted to bring me on board to be a backup. And I felt that I was nobody's backup. And I just called it quits after that. So, you know, injuries and pride, you know, get me out of the league. And there's nothing I could really do about it. I just had to deal with the fact that my career was over. And it was troubling because you know, everybody says that, you know, they're prepared and it's all over, but it was just thrown on me and I just had to deal with it. And unfortunately, there's a lot of guys that are in that same situation where it's just thrown on them when you just can't play anymore. And Father Time says it's over.
Unfortunately, offensive linemen don't get the credit that they're really due. And, you know, there's not a lot of statistics that get put up on TV for fans to point to offensive linemen. But for you, looking back on your career, is there like a particular game, because even though there might not be the measurable stats that we'll see all over TV, you know what you did really well. And you know, when you had a great game, is there a particular game that stands out for you where you just know you had probably your best game?
Well, I think when I was in Pittsburgh, my best game that I probably ever had was anytime we played Cleveland, or anytime we played the Browns. That hatred towards the Browns was instilled in me. You know, very early when I was a Steeler. So I always got up for the Steeler games. I had a pretty good game against Reggie White, believe it or not, because, I mean, my teammates tortured me the whole week. That's when Reggie was with Green Bay. And I mean, believe it or not, I kept Reggie didn't get a sack that game. I mean, Bill Coach Howard tell you, you know, his hamstring. I remember running to the locker room. We lost the game because Green Bay threw a last second touchdown in the end zone. And I remember walking into the locker room and Coach Coward telling me, "Oh, Reggie had a bad hamstring." I said, "No, Reggie didn't have no bad. He just got blocked the whole game." I remember that. So he kind of stole my glory a little bit. He tried to minimize my glory because I kept Reggie off the quarterback. But in my best game in Jacksonville, my best game, I think the playoff game when we played Denver, when they were the number one seed, I think I had a great game there. And I had a couple of good – and a couple of times when I went up against the Freak. You know, there was this big thing about Javon Curse and the Freak, and he was just tearing up the NFL, and I shut him down. Had a good game against Strahan. He'll probably tell you different, but I dominated him. So I had a few games where I could, you know, pat myself on the back, but I was never one. I mean, I was the epitome of offensive lineman. I mean, team offensive line success meant that everybody succeeded. So, you know, if we all succeeded and accomplished that, I considered that a good game. And, you know, I played with some great offensive linemen. You know, when Pittsburgh, I played with the Hall of Fame, DeMonte Dawson. I mean, he's still the greatest offensive lineman I ever played with. And then when I was in Jacksonville, you know, I played across from Tony Boselli. So, you know, I've been fortunate to be on some pretty good offensive linemen while I was playing, offensive line teams when I was in the NFL.
Well, I think the hot topic of the NFL today is players retiring early. You had Borland from the 49ers, a few other guys. What's your take on the guys retiring early? You know, your take on the NFL and how they look out or don't look out for player safety?
Well, I think if you've got to think about getting hurt, then you need not play. And, you know, that's the last thing you can do, because when you think about getting hurt, that's when you get hurt. And a lot of these guys that are retiring early, I mean, they're thinking about their future. I mean, these guys now are bigger, faster, stronger. The concussions are coming more frequent. And if they get their money, I mean, there's a lot of money being thrown out now, a lot of guaranteed money going out now. So if guys getting their money before they turn 30, there's no reason to play 10, 12, 14, 15 years. I mean, when I was coming out, guys had to play long to get their money. And they usually got their money on the back end, and they usually played the younger guys early. But now these guys are getting their money front-loaded. So they're getting the $20, the $30, the $40 million guarantee before they turn 30, and there's no need to play all that long. And I think these guys are also looking at the fact that this concussion thing is serious. It's a serious case. It's a serious something that the NFL definitely has been addressing. They still need a lot more work on, a lot more information. So these guys are thinking long term. I mean, no one wants to be in their 50s not remembering their children or their wife or having to be taken care of. A lot of these guys don't want to burden their families as they get older. So I think you're seeing a lot of guys getting their money, getting out of the league. And I don't think it's going to be a trickle-down effect. I think it's going to happen. But what you need to worry about is the best athletes playing other sports. You got to think about the generations to come. I mean, because the parents, the mom and dad are seeing what the after effects that footballs are having on their children, then you're going to see a lot of the better athletes probably going to play the other sports. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen within the next 5 to 10 years, but who's to say the next 30 or 40 years? You might have, you know, some of the better athletes going to other sports just because, you know, these guys don't want to be vegetables when they turn 50.
Yeah. Matt?
Leon, if you ever sit down with a young athlete, whether it be for your business or another situation, What is the most important advice that you like to give a young athlete?
I tell them to, well, when I talk to high school kids, you don't know, you will be amazed at how many high school kids ask me about going pro. And I say, look, man, go to college to get an education. And then when I start spitting out the statistics that only 1.5% of the guys who play college football go to the NFL, you know, then they look at it a little differently. I just tell high school kids to to be passionate about their game, play hungry, perfect your craft, and if you get an opportunity to go to college, make sure you graduate. Now, college kids going into the pros, I tell them to be leery. I tell them to watch their money, invest their money, consider yourself a corporation, write your own bills, don't trust anybody. I tell be leery of men as well as women, because both of them will entrap you in some way or another. And learn to say no, because most of your money is going to be asked from people that you know the best, your homeboy you grew up with, your cousin, your family member. Because I just remember situations where I went into the NFL where I, competent adults that I knew all my life all of a sudden couldn't pay their bills. And they would come to me and ask me for a car note here, a house note here, pay this bank loan. So they've got to learn to say no. They got to make up in their mind who they're going to help, how much they're going to take to help them, and then be done with it. And invest their money, and they need to invest their money like tomorrow will be their last day in the NFL, because you're getting all these sums of money. You want to make sure you put it away. And all the programs that the NFL have available for you, like the 401Ks, the annuities, the pensions, all, make sure that you put all your money, as much as you can, in those things, because the NFL matches it, and it's gonna help you when you turn 35, 40, 45 years old, even 55. So, I mean, that's the advice that I give kids, whether they be in high school and college, to just be leery of people that want to take advantage of you. Enjoy your time there, but also realize that it's a business. And you can't help everybody. A blessing is not for everybody. So help those that you want to help. Don't worry about what they say to you. Do your best for them and then be done with them.
Well, I can tell you this. It was an honor to have you on the show tonight. I mean, whenever you go ahead and get ready to publish your book, you come on, promote it all you want. I'm sure Troy with the Red Light Force Network will put a link on it.
Well, I appreciate you gave me some good advice, too, earlier about that book, so I'm going to roll with that, too.
Well, I mean, I got a book coming out, too, so everybody knows. I'm sure I brought it up before on here, but I'll let you know how it goes with mine. And anything we can ever do to help you, Leon, all you got to do is call us.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Leon, I'd like to second that. It was a real honor to have you on.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, Leon, this is Troy. Before you go, make sure you hook up with me on Twitter or on our website and talk to Mike, because I definitely, with your company, let's set up something where I can get a Click and Go logo right on our network, so our fans can click onto your website. I'll gladly put a Click and Go logo in our advertising section for your business down there, buddy. So I appreciate you coming on the show. Hook up with either myself or Mike, and get us over a logo and a link, and I'll definitely go on the website and I'll get a little Click and Go logo there so we can promote your business. But I think it's a great opportunity for a lot of people, and I'll gladly promote that on the network.
Well, I appreciate it, guys, and thanks for having me on.
All right. Thank you, Leon.
Thank you, Leon.
You got it.
Hey, remember, guys, tomorrow night we have a special Thursday night show with Gary Jeter, former star of the Rams, Giants, and Patriots. He was supposed to be on last week. He was on the last 20 minutes of the show. We had some technical difficulties. So Mr. Jeter will be on tomorrow night. And then next Wednesday, I confirmed today, Dennis Smith, former all-pro safety with the Denver Broncos, will be our guest next Wednesday night. You got any closing thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, Leon had a very good career and definitely went through some hard times, but it's really good to hear how he's bouncing back and being able to help other people to just be able to handle some things that he had some hard times handling. He's doing a good job.
And Troy, are you still there?
Of course, you can see my number in the studio.
Okay, Troy, this is what happened tonight. You remember that time a few months ago when I listened to your show and you clicked me in and I was just wanting to listen to your show?
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's a blog talk issue, buddy. I didn't hit anything.
No, we're even now, all right?
I know we're going to get cut off here shortly. Matt, how you doing, bud? What you been up to?
I'm doing real good. Enjoying my time and Hope you're doing good too.
Oh, you know, I'm not doing anything. I'm just a lazy guy over here. Don't do anything.